Women from such an early age are taught to control their emotions. They're taught to push it all down, to tamp it down, to control themselves, to limit their outbursts, to limit their expression, to limit their emotion, which to me would set us up from day one with mental health problems.
I'm Sonia Statman, and you're listening to The Feminine Lens. Over the last 20 years, I've had the honor to work with thousands of women around the globe in self-development, in leadership, and in business. Being in the trenches with women has taught me that we have to stop seeing ourselves and the world through the patriarchal lens. I've spent my life helping women look through a new lens, a feminine lens, a lens that honors our innate worth and wisdom, a lens that empowers us with more wealth and freedom. The Feminine Lens is designed to challenge you. It will change what you think and what you know, but it will help you reclaim yourself. And that is the way we change the world. Ready? Let's do this. Hi, and welcome back to The Feminine Lens. So this is episode 3, so we're still a baby in this lovely podcast. And today I have a very special guest, the co-host of my other podcast, Women in the Business Arena. So if you haven't listened to that, you should go check it out, but you're going to love her on the show today. So this is Laura Shook Guzman. She is a somatic psychotherapist. And we thought today we would kind of approach and talk about the idea of mental health and how we can look at mental health through the feminine lens and why we even need to look at mental health through the feminine lens. So how is it different than the masculine lens? What do you think, Laura?
I love this conversation already. It's so in my passion, you know, wheelhouse, I would say. It's not just something that I've learned a lot about through my 20 years as a mental health professional, but it's just something personally that I have a lot of passion around, because I see a lot of women personalizing their struggles with mental health because of the different systemic challenges that they face. And you can also say this applies to people of color, people that are in the minority in our country that are often struggling with mental health and not really getting the support and the resources that they need. So thank you for making the space on the show to talk about mental health today.
Yeah, I think it's such an important topic. And I think when we talk about it with respect to women and what we face with it, I think it really changes the conversation. And that's what's so important about this topic here on this podcast is we want to change the conversation. We want to look at it from a perspective that we can resonate, that we can understand, and that really is relevant to our lives and the unique situations that we face. And maybe first start, can we talk about a little bit about how you define mental health? Because I think even that is a really interesting frame of words, right? Like, what is mental health?
Yeah, great question. And, you know, sometimes I struggle with the fact that mental health seems, it just is a word that falls short, or two words that fall short of capturing what it means to me. So, you know, traditionally mental health is when we're examining the emotional aspect of our psyche and of the mind. And for many years, it was very much a cognitive understanding. And so as you introduced me, I don't know if many people know what a somatic psychotherapist is, but, I study somatic psychology, which is body-based psychology. And that is, you know, a branch of psychology that really understands the mind-body connection. And we see our emotional experience not just deriving from our cognitive thoughts, but from the felt experience, from the sensations of the body. The body has a moment of experiencing, you know, a positive or a negative experience that is then turned into emotion. And then emotions like what we create and meaning from. Our mind creates meaning, you know. And so mental health is our ability to stay in regulation within the body and also like staying balanced within emotional space. So you can have extreme emotions. We're human beings. We should have the full spectrum. But people who struggle with mental health challenges or issues, what you'll hear commonly, is those that get stuck in these extremes where they often are experiencing anxiety to such a point that it interferes with daily functioning, or depression, or dysregulated moods, you know, in the case of bipolar or PTSD, when an event that was traumatic was not able to be healed and released, and they are constantly reliving that experience. So mental health is this, you know, field of study in which we seek to understand what brings us as humans into integration and coherence so that we have the full access to our emotional experience.
Yeah. And I think one of the things that's really important to acknowledge as well is, you know, at least the way I grew up, and I was a psychology major as well. You know, I really was interested in psychology, how we worked. And I always framed mental health as people who were, you know, almost dissociated in a way from their life, right? So like really severe mental health versus the mental health that I think we can reframe things now that can be extensive stress, right? It can be, you know, daily anxiety. I think that almost all of us can struggle with some form of mental health, right? But I don't know that we always frame it that way. We don't always talk about it in terms of mental health. So what have you noticed in the way that we frame it? Like, is it just everyday people? Is it pretty much everyone that struggles with this topic? Like, tell us a little bit more about, you know, the way we can frame it.
Yeah, that's a great point, because I think you're not alone in that. Many people, when we think of mental health, we're thinking of the extremes where people really are unable to function, or they're thinking of that relative that had schizophrenia and, you know, really wasn't able to be in the world in the same way that they were. So then when they try to think about their own mental health, it's like, well, I'm not that, you know? And so we kind of have this comparison or reference point. So even recently, you know, as different like advocacy groups have tried to make more, I'd say, headway in languaging, you know, instead of using disability, we say differently abled, or instead of saying, you know, mental disorder, it's, you know, a mental health challenge, or we strive for mental wellness. So I think there's a lot of importance around the words that we use, and you can start being mindful of that when you think about your own, like when you're talking about mental health, just embracing that as like, yeah, my mental wellness, my mental health. And being able to kind of, the frame of reference is that we are all going to struggle with mental health. Right now, 1 in 4 adults in the United States are saying that they're struggling, you know, because of this time of COVID. So 1 in 4 is a very common, but I'm still thinking, I'm thinking 4 out of 4, yeah. You know, but is it what you said? Like, people might not really think it's mental health because, well, I'm still getting up every day. I'm still pushing through. I'm still managing. I'm still keeping my job. I'm still raising my kids. But at what cost to your mental health are you actually making every day? And what could you do to bring yourself into more, I really like to say, you know, more alignment, more balance, more cohesion, more integration? Those are all words that I think are metrics and measurements of am I actually doing well today? No.
Yeah. And that's a really good question as well. Like, what is optimal mental health, right? Maybe this is something we all should be sitting down and framing, right? I don't think I've ever really actually thought about this. I do talk about mental health a lot. I don't think I've ever sat and really thought about, but what is my definition? What's my, you know, framework that I want to have for when I am in optimal mental health? Like, how can we do that? What do you think is a good framework or a good definition for optimal mental health?
And that really would be a great way for people to think about it, because then you're not doing a comparison and contrast and like, that's mental health, but what's mental health for me? And I think, you know, really paying attention to, so mental, when we think of balanced mental health, when I say things like integration, coherence, alignment, that means that you feel a sense of like what you're feeling on the inside, what you're feeling in your body is matching with like what you're, what you would say is like your emotional experience. So your internal and your external, so to speak. We're not talking about like environment, like other people, but like, what's your kind of perception of yourself? Like, I'm feeling happy. I'm feeling really happy. And then check in. It's like, oh yeah, that is actually in alignment with my body, because my belly feels really nice and soft and I feel really relaxed. So it's kind of this, how are we really checking the thoughts, the emotions, and the sensations that we're experiencing? So if you're having this thought, I'm happy, and then you check it out, you're like, yeah, I'm really feeling that. I'm feeling my smile. I'm feeling some lightness. I'm feeling some engagement. Like, I want to get to things. I feel a little alert. And then I'm also checking that out of my body. And so when we think about that, it's like, it doesn't have to be just happiness. It's like mental health can also be, okay, I'm struggling today with sadness. How much of alignment and congruency is there? So I'm thinking, gosh, I feel really sad. And yeah, let me feel that. I'm feeling that and my chest is really heavy and I just feel like I'm on the verge of tears. And then the mind comes in and shares the context. Well, of course, like this has been a lot. Like you just let go of a relationship or something just big happened. And so you acknowledge that and then you feel it in your body. And it's all like, yes, 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 this makes sense. And the more aligned we are, then we're able to actually come up with like intuitive solutions. Then we kind of know like, oh, I need to take the day a little bit slower. I might need to call a friend. I might need to do something that is good for this experience and it can really validate and support me. And so think about that. So if you're in that place of really, you know, integrated mental health and you're checking in and you're feeling that alignment between internal and external and all that's going pretty well, then you have this capacity to keep moving through. And then the roller coaster of life doesn't mean that life starts to be all great and everything's, you know, rainbows and sprinkles. That's not what's actually happening. It just means that you actually are in alignment. And when it goes really well, you feel it, you celebrate it, you feel the joy. When it goes really down, you're in the sorrow, but you get it and it's able, you're really able to understand like what's happening. When mental health is on the other extreme and things are not in that alignment and there's a challenge that needs to be addressed, that you need more support very likely, or you need something to shift, is when you're just feeling like things are not matching up. Like you just don't feel like yourself often, or you find yourself struggling, but you can't ever align your behavior. You just push and you just push and you just push, even though you're exhausted. And that eventually, what can just start off as problematic can become a mental health issue because you're no longer in that coherence between the internal interoception of self and the extraception of self, the perception of self. Does that make sense? So, you know, and there's more I can be saying about that, but I'm kind of trying to give people something to kind of work with of like knowing, are you having experiences more often than not? It's not about perfection, where you feel in alignment with yourself and that kind of coherence with your matching your emotional and mental schemas with what you're also feeling in your body. Does that happen more often than not?
Yeah. And I think it's interesting. I don't think I've ever looked at it that way in terms of the congruency, right? I think sometimes when we think about optimal mental health, we do think about we're pretty happy, we're, you know, floating, we're like, everything's good. We perceive everything as good, but that actually isn't optimal mental health, right? Like it is about feeling all the lows. It is about acknowledging I'm feeling grief today. I'm feeling sadness today. I'm feeling anger today. Like this is where I'm at and that's okay. I'm okay with allowing those feelings and being with those feelings and not trying to like cut them off. Like that actually can be optimal mental health. And that brings us to something so interesting in terms of the feminine and masculine lens, right? Because women from such an early age are taught to control their emotions. They're taught to push it all down, to tamp it down, to control themselves, to limit their outburst, to limit their expression, to limit their emotion, which to me would set us up from day one with mental health problems.
Right. Oh, absolutely. And yeah, and this actually segues into something I wanted to add on because I was talking about kind of mental health within knowing that your hormones are regulating properly, your brain chemistry is, you know, fairly regulated and being able to kind of notice if you're in the mental health space that's more integrated or if there's need of more support. And so what women have often been unaware of is that they've been culturally conditioned to live in circumstances or just to push through things that will literally be pushing the body into a place of being out of balance. So constant overwork and constant inability to set boundaries and things because it's not socially acceptable can then create, you know, a body that goes into overdrive and has to pull more from the fight flight response. And so is spending more time in the sympathetic nervous system. So we have the two branches of the nervous system, sympathetic, parasympathetic. The sympathetic nervous system is your fight flight. And that's when there's a threat or there's something you need to, if you're in a lot of stress, you stay in that place because your body is wired to keep you safe by being alert. And when you're rested, you go into parasympathetic. That helps with your digestion and helps us connect to others. So systemically speaking, women may actually spend a lot more time in fight flight because we feel unsafe often in our environments, right?
Yep.
And we are often over functioning for others. So there's like a tendency to stay in the overdrive and that alert, you know, we're worried about threat to our family, threat to our children or to people we care about. So we tend to kind of have this societal stamp of though permission to do that, to stay in those places. So it's really over time, what we see is that, you know, so much of mental health now as science becomes more and more, and I think we're going to continue to understand it even more, but our neurotransmitters and our brain chemistry and all these things that are regulated with our nervous system, I mean, all these things, our brain and body and our gut, all these things have to work together in coherence and in integration. And when those things are not working properly, then it skews the rest of the body. And so there you end up with mental illness and where people are like fighting, you know, to destigmatize mental illness, to say like, this is not just me not doing what I'm supposed to do to take care of my body or me not doing what I'm supposed to do to take care of myself. It's actually a layered and layered and layered, you know, and things that have environmentally happened and genetically happened to get the body out of that place of equilibrium.
Yeah. And I think it's really to bring it down to, you know, the ground a little bit as well, like for people who haven't maybe navigated or dove into any of the stuff about our body and our chemistry and all these things. Basically, if you are under stress a lot, right? Like you are messing up the chemistry in your body. Now, how often are we trying to fix the chemistry, trying to fix the physicalness? Like, for instance, I'm gaining weight. I'm trying to lose weight. You know, I'm dealing with all these hormones. It must be the hormones. We're always kind of navigating these outward symptoms instead of navigating the cause, which is stress. Like this is how important your nervous system is yes. It contributes to every part of your bodily functions.
Yes, this is the truth. And so this brings me around to a field of psychology that I've always been fascinated by and is appropriate, very appropriate for the feminine lens, is feminist psychology. Mm. And feminist psychology, of course, I believe it was like really kind of rooted around the 60s and 70s is when I'm sure it even existed prior to them. But what I mostly studied myself is like the thought of study that came at that time that was really concerned about how women were being treated. So then you have like the mental health diagnoses that women were receiving for certain behavior, like being really depressed because they were in the 50s, the household, you know, the woman stuck in the suburbs by herself, expected now to be the perfect woman because she had all these appliances that were supposed to keep her company. And her husband was going commuting every day and the kids were at school, right? And so they noticed a really increase at that time in women's mental health, a lot of depression and what they also called hysteria.
Yeah.
Interesting.
That was even earlier, wasn't it? Like even in like the 20s and 30s.
Hysteria was even earlier.
Yep.
But it continued on into that. It was that same kind of mindset. And that's just I'll just give that one as an example. There are many throughout history, but an example in which women having a normal response emotionally to some abnormal situations that human beings don't do well in, that we don't thrive in, that we're gonna have these reactions to, these women were seen as abnormal and they were seen as mentally ill and they needed to be treated. And they did, you know, and so the feminist psychology lens was kind of had, you know, the academics that were unpacking that, you know, and I'm like, wait a minute. So that's a really interesting, you know, you can always Google that and there's tons of people that you can read, but it's an interesting way of looking at, you know, because our field, just like so many different fields and industries, very heavy masculine lens because male physicians, male psychiatrists, you know, Freud, everybody knows Freud. He had a male perspective and a male lens, although, you know, he did bring a lot of really wonderful insight that we continue to use today. But, you know, it's like that is kind of an interesting example of just like we are in stress and we just go, oh, okay, something's wrong with me. We don't think about what's happening in our culture. Like, am I in a workplace that's toxic? Do I have colleagues that are wearing their stress like a badge and I'm expected to do the same? Or maybe there's something about this culture that isn't okay. And I could be okay if I was to be able to shift my work environment or my, you know, my clients I'm seeing or whatever that is. So I know, I hope that answers your question. Kind of went big.
It does. And I think, you know, I love one of the things that you said, I really want to pull out and maybe unpack a little bit, you know, this idea that we're having normal responses to abnormal situations. And I think we're perfectly positioned right now this year in that we're having normal responses to abnormal situations. And yet we're beating ourselves up for not navigating it more effectively. We're, you know, struggling to admit that we're not navigating it effectively. We're, you know, struggling with the fact that we're having to deal with so much more stress. And there is like very specific situations that are put more on women. You know, like in the pandemic, as an example, we're dealing with the fact that still the majority of women are responsible for the childcare. They're responsible for the kids out of school. They're responsible for the online learning. Sure, there's some men who are, you know, taking control of that and supporting their wives, etc. But more women are in charge of that than men. We've seen a huge amount of women have to leave the workforce because they're forced to have to respond and be the teacher at home. And that's a lot of stress. Like, or you have two people at home trying to navigate this childcare, all these situations. I think there's all this abnormal stuff going on. And what is so interesting is that instead of looking at it is, yeah, these are normal responses, melting down, exhaustion, like stress, anxiety, normal. A lot of people are looking at themselves as if something's wrong. They should be able to tough it out. They should be able to handle it better.
Yes. And what's really interesting about that is it actually shuts people down from getting help.
Yeah.
Because guess what? They start experiencing shame. So when we start to personalize systemic problems, when we start to think that we are abnormal instead of the events that are happening to us, then we start to experience shame. And then we are afraid to talk about it. And there's a stigma. If we think it's mental health, we're afraid to even bring that up. What if there's mental health in the family in which there was trauma around that story? Someone that was institutionalized, someone who really dropped out of, you know, what was the typical family functioning. So there are people that are very scared about when they start to feel like something is not okay. That is why it's so important that we have these conversations that we're having right now to be like, actually, most people are feeling this way. And that validation is what I do for my clients a lot of times, because I am privy to hearing thousands of people tell me their story. And those common universal themes continue to come through. And I am able to, with all honesty, not because I'm just trying to make you feel better, you are not the only one. Everyone else is also feeling this way. So let's talk about it. Let's talk about mental health. Like we would talk about our new keto diet or our new, you know, it's like people want to talk about fitness, their, you know, new fitness regime, their new diet. It's like mental health is something we should just be able to freely talk about. Like what's working? Do you love going to talk therapy? Do you like somatic therapy? Are you doing yoga? Like, is that therapeutic enough for your mental health? Oh yeah, my yoga teacher's trauma informed. I really like it. You know, it's like, why are we don't have these conversations like we do about other parts of our wellness and our nutrition. So what I would like to see is for those of us that are in leadership positions in our businesses, being able to really bring a highlight to it. That's like, this is happening to us. Thankfully, I have seen that more often this year, you know, with like newsletters and some of the beautiful newsletters I receive from people I follow. I see them bringing attention, trying to say it's okay that we're not okay and normalizing it. But I think that, you know, I see that happening within a certain group, those of us that are, you know, all listening probably to this podcast, but there's a wide variety of other people that really need to be hearing this message. And to your point, just one more example that a lot of people can understand where it's normal behavior, but leads into people like saying it's a negative thing, is going to be like children in school that are diagnosed, unfortunately, erroneously diagnosed with ADHD when they have PTSD. And you see that in low socioeconomic schools a lot because these children are living in very unstable environments with poverty. There is, like, you know, often issues with the apartment that they live in, how many people are in the household, what noise is like, how their nervous systems are able to regulate. They come to school and their nervous systems are still not regulated and their bodies are moving and their eyes are darting all over the place and they're checking the door and they're talking over the teacher, not because they have a deficit, attention deficit, you know, disorder. It's because there's trauma in the body and their body is doing what is normal in order to feel safe.
Yes, gosh, I could just pull that topic off and talk about it all day. I mean, and adults even, there's a lot of adults lately that have come to me, you know, even clients, et cetera, who's like, I've just been diagnosed with ADHD, ADD. I'm like, interesting. All right, let's explore. Of course, there is a common denominator that most of them have had extreme trauma, some form of abuse in their life, right? Or even little traumas. Like, that's the other thing, you know, around mental health. Sometimes we think that we have should have gone through something so heavy, so big, so much abuse in order to experience trauma. But there are a lot of little traumas that add up in our nervous system, that add up in our body, and that create an effect. And that effect can be a loss of attention, a loss of capacity. And I want to come back around in a couple of minutes to capacity. But, you know, to finish this thought out, I think, you know, we often misdiagnose because there isn't an understanding of how trauma affects us, big and little traumas. And it lives in our body until it's integrated.
Yes, yes. So, I mean, I think that what I would like the listeners to hear as we're having this conversation is, you know, as we're talking about, there is a feminine lens that we can look at mental health, and we can understand that women might be being diagnosed or being, you know, treated as if they're struggling with mental health when they're actually having a normal reaction to some abnormal situations. And instead of really having that stigma or that, you know, this is a disorder or there's something wrong with you, there's actually this big possibility that there is something wrong with the container and that woman needs a different level of support and understanding from others and from herself. So what I really think my biggest goal in working with my clients and even just like speaking here and talking with others is that if we can bring a more compassionate lens to how we think about our mental wellness, our mental health, and to really understand that if we're showing signs of illness, disordered thinking, dysregulated nervous system, that there's no shame in that experience. It's actually just providing information. It's our mind and our body being so wise and beautiful to tell us, please pay attention. Your thoughts are not coherent. Your energy is not sustained. Your emotions are not stabilizing. There's something here that means that there is a need for attention, for resources, for support. That's how I see it. It's simply a cry from the psyche and from the body to please tend more compassionately with me.
I think that's so beautiful. And oh my gosh, there's just like so many different pieces. I'm sure we will talk about this topic several times, you know, over the coming months. But I think, you know, one of the things I was thinking about as you were talking is that so often, sometimes when we think about mental health, we think of it in disconnection to our power, as if like something in our brain has changed and now we need maybe drugs to fix it. But we don't really see the power that we have to make changes in our mental health. And so, you know, it's really interesting because I think empowering ourselves to recognize that, of course, like, you know, if there is an extreme mental health issue, you need a practitioner, you need someone to be working with you, you need to be navigating that, you know, with someone who can really support you. But I also think when we have, you know, just general struggle with anxiety or general struggle with stress or, you know, some of these things that we're dealing with, sometimes we think, oh, there's something wrong with our body, there's something wrong with our mind, instead of recognizing what is our environment like, right? What was our history? What was our childhood like? Because even though, like, I might have a totally great life right now, if I had a lot of trauma in my childhood, I've carried that forward if I haven't integrated it. And so it's still in my body somewhere. I'm still dealing with that. So there's all these pieces, you know, and then in our current circumstances, how much stress am I under on a daily basis? Do I have a support system or am I always alone? Do I feel like I'm the only one raising the kids? What are all these things that I'm navigating that are in my current circumstances? You know, just as like Laura and I have worked a lot with women in business as well, like women in business, you know, how often is it just they have no capacity for themselves? They have no space for themselves. They have no time for self-care. Their lives are so busy that that is one thing they have control over. That's one thing they can shift and change. So I think there's this really kind of interesting topic about how we can understand or at least recognize that our mental health is somewhat under our power. It's not this thing out there that we have to get someone to fix, that there is things that we can do on a daily basis to shift and change our own mental health.
Absolutely. Yes. And that is the empowering piece where it's not like I have to look at this as a permanent label that is all about, you know, me being broken. It's like mental health advocates today want people to know that just like everyone is differently abled in different bodies with different skill sets, is that we all have different challenges and different strengths in our mental health. And it's about learning to really learn what is it that you need and to advocate. What I love coming out of a lot of this work I'm seeing coming out of Canada and the UK, and I'm sure it's in the United States, but what I'm really seeing in my feeds that the organizations I'm following are really paying attention to helping people advocate for what they need in the workplace to be able to. There's like this one campaign that was like, Dear Manager. And it was basically, this is what's happening with me right now. These are my mental health needs. Very stimulating environments are triggering me. You know, if you have PTSD, you are not going to want to sit in a certain work environment that is constantly, you know, moving and shaking around you. And before a lot of people just felt bad that they couldn't adapt and that they weren't, you know, flexible enough. And now it's like, nope, I have this that is a sensitivity. I have this that is a need in my body. And it's very empowering to own that, not as a brokenness, not as something that is less than, but something that is needing your love and your attention. And you're asking that the people around you, the people that you work for, or the people that you work with, are simply able to see you in that fullness and that full awareness of who you are and what you need without judgment and without feeling like you're having to switch into some sort of acceptable way of being.
Definitely. And I think, you know, to kind of grab back one of those threads before, I think we can't really talk about sort of this optimal mental health unless we talk about capacity. Right. We talk about space.
Yeah. I love that you said you're coming back to capacity. Yeah. One of my favorite words.
I know. We do. And so, you know, we talk a lot about capacity on our other podcasts because we talk about it in reference to business, right? Like a lot of times we don't create capacity. We don't build capacity into our lives. And I think when I am not optimized in my mental wellness or mental health, a lot of times it's because I have no more capacity. I don't have capacity in my brain. I don't have capacity in my attention. I don't have capacity in my regulation of my nervous system. I don't have capacity in my day-to-day life or even in my time schedule. And when I start to shrink capacity, I shrink my ability to process, to navigate, to even know what I'm feeling, right? To have any kind of congruity between my nervous system and my brain and my feelings. It's like everything is cut off and compartmentalized because I have no capacity to address it.
Yes. And there is a correlation. This is one of the, you know, ways in which they have conducted research looking in areas of resiliency and, you know, capacity. And it's so beautiful because there is a correlation that shows those who demonstrate higher levels of capacity, which is often the ability to withstand. It's not that they don't feel it. It's an ability to sit with stress and discomfort and be able to recalibrate or rebound back into the resting state. So how, you know, extreme can you go by also coming back in? That's your capacity, really. It's like, oh, I can experience something really intense, but I have the ability to make room for that experience, to feel the heights of that. And then I'm also able to shift down into my parasympathetic nervous system. So this regulation between the expansion and contraction of which is the body. So your capacity to expand to your limits, to the human limits, and then to be able to come back into a contraction to rest. That has been found that people who, and they have, you know, I wish I had some like great research right now to reference, but just again, Google it. Don't trust me, but go out there and look at it, because there's actually really great studies out there about post-traumatic growth, and it's looking at that ability. So the question is our ability to be resilient, our ability to be more capable, you know, how do you get that, right? That's what my clients want to know. And that's why they're coming to see me in psychotherapy, is that that's really my work with my clients, is like, how are we going to address where you are in your current state of capacity? And how can we increase that? Because life is not going to get any easier. We just want to increase your capacity to be with it, and to still stay within coherence and integration and regulation. And so, yeah, I mean, that might be a whole other show about like how to increase your capacity, but a lot of it has to do with ability to return to self, ability to come bring attention from all the external and be able to come into the internal, develop what we call introspection, which is the ability to perceive your internal state, which can be your sensations, your emotions, and your thoughts.
Yeah, definitely. And it's so interesting because in a lot of ways, that's also the work that I do with women, right? It is creating capacity. So people come to me with their businesses or their lives or their leadership roles, whatever it is they're into, and we work to increase their capacity. Totally different route. So I don't do psychotherapy with you. So just to kind of be clear with that. But I help people create capacity in their time, in their life, in their mental state, in their emotions. And it is so much about reclaiming ourselves in a way, right? Like you, just like you talked about, the framework I use is it's about reclaiming ourselves. It's about shedding the things that are misaligned with who we are. It's about shedding the things that we don't really value. It's about shedding the old paradigms. It's about integrating trauma. Like all of those things are very relevant to come back into ourselves so that we have more capacity. Two very different routes to that process, but in so many ways, very similar. And I think capacity is just such an important topic, and we should just do a whole entire podcast episode on it, because it is a very important topic that we don't really talk enough about. We don't really understand, because the masculine lens, the patriarchal lens, the way the world has been created, it pushes for less capacity. Every day it pushes for less capacity. You should be doing more. You should be being more. You should be thinking about more. You should be like, you know, activated more. You know, everything is about more, 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 more. And that gives us a lot less capacity.
Right. And it's likely, this is my own personal theory, it's likely also that women struggle with capacity and overwhelm more often than men, because we do assume emotional labor, a lot of emotional labor for men. So they are not having to dive into that within themselves. Like even just thinking about the way that they go after their success, they have a very different path often, like, okay, this is what I have to do. When just like full circle back to something you're talking about, women having to like record number of women having to stop work, not drop out, not opt out, but like literally being pushed out of work right now because of COVID job losses, right? So women, if this was happening to men, if men were unable to work at the levels that women are having to not work, it would be an epidemic where there would already be something like Viagra for their like productivity. I mean, it would just be like, there would be something about it, you know, but, totally. But there, yeah, but that is not what they're usually, you know, their pathway is paved and it's supported. And there are a lot of women in their lives that are doing the emotional labor. So it's like, you're stressed out, but I got this, I got the kids, I got the food, I've got everything. I've got the emotional labor covered. So your capacity can just go to work. Your capacity can go to that meeting and that boss that's driving you crazy and that project that you got to push and that startup you got to launch. They have a surge capacity because the women around them are picking up the other pieces of the emotional load. Again, this is just my own personal theory, but I see that so much with my clients and consider, you know, female-male counterparts that I can't help but comment on it, that I think that, you know, we really as women need to understand that not only are we trying to hold our own capacity, we are often trying to then hold the capacity open for our loved ones, for our male partners, for our children. And there's some work there around the society recognizing that so that we can get the support that we need. And also then us being okay to set those boundaries and not feeling like we're less than because we're not overfunctioning.
100%. Like there's just so many things I could say about that, you know, and same, like, you know, the clients that I work with, this is what I see, you know, consistently across the board, the women are holding that emotional labor and oftentimes some of the physical labor, the domestic labor, the child, you know, work, all of these different things. And we often just do it without complaint or we do it without, you know, I don't know, even understanding that it's an extra thing, that it's, you know, an extra thing that we're holding all the time. And I think it's really interesting when you switch. I've seen, you know, some definitely some interesting things during this pandemic. You know, if you follow my story at all, my husband and I switched roles a few years ago when I retired him from corporate. And it's really interesting when you start to look at, you know, how much harder it is for them to step into, like even the men who are stepping into these roles are not taking on the kind of labor that we already had. The understanding and the things we could hold are like a fraction of what they can hold, right? So what they can hold is a fraction of what we had. So I think it's really interesting as you really look at this, there is such a gender difference in what we are holding and in that capacity. I also think women are so much more or less likely to give themselves self-care, to prioritize themselves. I often hear, you know, some of the women who come to me and work with me in my coaching practice, my coaching program, oftentimes what I see is them say things like, well, my husband needs extra time when he gets off work. Like he comes home, he needs all that time when he comes home. He doesn't need to be with the kids. He needs time to himself, or he needs time to himself on the weekends. And I'm like, well, when do you get time to yourself? And they're like, well, never, you know, because he works all week. I mean, I work all week too. And I also have all the childcare and I also put the kids to bed at night. And I was, and I'm like, And so like, how is that? Like, why are we not recording our own labor? Like, why do we diminish what we need, what we deserve? I think that's a whole nother thing we have to look at in our mental health and in our capacity, that like, all of these topics can also really boil down to this idea of, you know, are we really taking care of ourselves first? We have to put that, you know, it's like the airplane. We have to put the mask on first before we can help others. But women are so conditioned to do it the other way.
Yeah, it is. There's so much of that conditioning. And on the positive side, one of the conditions that, you know, a lot of people will say for women, the gold is that we do get to emote. We do get to be emotional. We do get to show vulnerability. We do get to reach out to friends and show that vulnerability. My challenge with that is that, unfortunately, we're not bringing that into the professional workspace or into the business world when we first were allowed entrance back in, you know, the 80s when we had to wear the shoulder pads and those kinds of things and move into corporate and into traditional workspaces. Women felt like they couldn't be emotional and be taken seriously. So there's also, this is a very interesting, just how mental health for women leaders and women in like the C-suites and these really high, I mean, we're starting to see, thank goodness, like we are seeing so much happening right now in our country with more women stepping into very high leadership positions and political positions. Yet, like, we have to really talk about, are we encouraging women to show up with all of that emotional intelligence in a way that's going to benefit the men around them as well? And are we opening the doors for men to have that same opportunity to be emotional, right? So this kind of gets into this, like, it's gendered, and then we have to like open up these professional spaces that have been, you know, treating men and women with certain expectations. And as women, being careful not to put our emotional health in the background because we want to be taken seriously. We need to be leading in the front and owning, which is like, you know, the wonderful female head of New Zealand, right? She was like, no apologies for what I need in her baby in the meetings and on her breast. That's an example of like, I want people to show up that way with their emotional health, their mental health, no apologies. Like, this is what we need to talk about. And if things are stressful, we need to have a minute in this meeting that we all take some deep resonant breaths together. And that needs to become norm and not any kind of woo-woo. And I know I'm getting off on a little tangent, but there you go.
And I want to highlight something else because I think it's interesting to really acknowledge as well. Like, we have this perception, and we talk about this on a regular basis, that women can go to their friends or they can go to their women's groups. They can do all these things and they can emote. But I don't really find that to be true. Like, how often do you really share your real feelings with the people in your lives? I mean, maybe you've got a real friend who you feel like you can tell, but how often are we trying to save people from us? Like, you know, like really, like how often are you trying to be like, I'm fine, I got this, how are you? Right? Like, really, how often do we come to someone and be like, I'm a total friggin' mess. I'm like, I got nothing together. I can't do anything, right? Like, you know, I definitely have had a few moments like that, but most of the time I'm like, yeah, I'm okay. How are you? How are you holding up? How are you doing? Right. And I think it still is not the norm for us to be really honest about how we feel. And that does affect our mental health. The fact that we can't emote, that we can't be real, that we can't be honest. And for women, it's because we're trying to care for others. We're trying to hold a space for them over ourselves. We're trying to make sure that we aren't too much of a burden to them, right? Like, that's the way we think. That's the way the feminine lens thinks. And we need to shift that. We really, really need to shift that so that it is okay and we can model, I'm a friggin' mess today.
And it's totally, and it's completely okay. Normal, yeah. Because I'm dealing with all these abnormal circumstances, right? Yes. I'm so glad you said that, because yes, even though we're kind of the generalization here that women definitely have more experience with emotions and permission in our society, it is true that we still live in a culture that, women are showing up already in the caretaking of like, I'm fine, how are you? Or, oh yeah, we'll get to me later, you know, and then you never get around to talking about what's going on, or, you know, and this inability to really drop the act and to be fully vulnerable. That is something that we only, you know, we have the gift. I'm fortunate enough to have that with, someone as amazing as you. So you and I get to show up that way with each other often. Yes. And it's beautiful, and it really makes the difference. And so it's really important to think, this is kind of top of mind right now, as I think about women in leadership, is that I really want to see, and I am seeing this, that they really own their emotional intelligence, their empathy skills, their compassionate skills, and, you know, just really make that the new normal for leadership. That's what I would love to see, where mental health is seen as something that is right up there with all of the other checklist of, you know, ability, decision-making, and, you know, mental health concern, and the ability to take care of myself. So.
Yes, 100%. Well, thank you so much for this amazing conversation. I will definitely be having Laura on, you know, on a regular basis. And of course, you can check out our other podcast, Women in the Business Arena. So, you know, this has been an amazing conversation. I'm so glad we could do this. If we can send out anything to the listeners, I really hope it's that we can normalize, you know, some of this idea around mental health, what mental health is, and that we all experience a struggle with it. And you're not alone and you're not crazy. It is normal for us to be struggling right now with what's happening in the world.
Absolutely. And Sonia, I just want to let everyone know that if they are feeling like they need support and they need to reach out and maybe need a mental health professional, they can visit my website that actually does have a list of free resources. And this is, you know, the national hotline, crisis hotline, domestic violence hotline, suicide hotline, plus all these different really great organizations and places that you can go to get more support or just education around mental health in general.
Yeah, we will definitely put that in the show notes and make sure everyone has it. So thank you all, and we will see you next week. Thanks so much for listening to The Feminine Lens. If you're a woman in business and tired of trying to operate through the traditional patriarchal lens, check out my group program. You get the chance to apply these podcast topics to your life and business. You'll find coaching, support, and new perspectives on how to grow your business with more alignment and freedom. You'll be surrounded by amazing women and transform the way you feel about your value, your voice, and the gift you are bringing to the world. Just head over to soniastatman.com. All right. See you next week.